Who win it now? Welcome, one and all, to the Pride of Detroit podcast, P.O.D. cast. It's not there for P.O.D. the band from the 90s. We talk about a lot of things 90s, but it is not about P.O.D. It's about Pride of Detroit. And that Pride of Detroit is about the Detroit Lions. Your Detroit Lions sitting abysmally at 1-3. But you know what, Ryan? We own the Bears.
Oh, man. I think we still technically do own the Bears. Games in a row.
6-1 in the last seven. We're resetting this record.
Oh, that's right. We lost last week. Damn it. Yeah. But, I mean, yeah, 6-1 in the last seven. That's still ownage. We still own the Bears. Fine.
We still own the Bears. Bringing it back. When's the next time we play Chicago? Like, what, December?
Yeah, probably the end of the year.
We'll get revenge. All right, let's do it.
Oh, we got it at home, baby.
We got it, baby. I don't know how much this team is going to be intact by then. Oh, God, they suck. We're going to be talking about the Lions. We're going to try to be talking about them and some other stuff. It's hard. That was a hard loss, and I've got no other way to really spruce it up. I don't. So let's get around the room here, though. I'm Chris Lemieux at Detroit Southern on Twitter. Joining me, as always, Ryan Matthews. Back is the motherfucking rock guy. At Ryan_POD. Hello, Ryan.
I'm happy to be here. Even with a Lions loss, I'm still happy to see your guys' faces and talk about Lions football.
You know what? It's just as Rasheed Wallace would say. Both teams played hard, man.
We're already trying to start to talk about basketball. Anything but football.
Basketball coming soon.
We're already trying to talk basketball, and it's preseason.
Don't tell Lions fans that the Lions actually played hard. They won't believe you.
Yeah, apparently. Alex Reno is your third voice there at Alex_Reno. Back in it finally here. Hello.
Back in it. How's it going, guys?
Yeah, Jeremy Reisman, fearless leader, is not here. His streak of attendance is broken. He is visiting his family back in Florida, and last we heard from him, he had to evacuate, and he had no power. So it's going wonderful for him. Happy Rosh Hashanah to the chosen people out there as well.
L'chaim.
Yeah, exactly. I was just at a dinner of that last night, and I can't remember that thing, but you nailed it there, Ryan.
Hey,
and happy whatever Catholic Saints Day it is probably one of them. Don't want to leave the Catholics out.
Let's
talk about the Lions. We've been dicking around enough. Let's talk about that god awful Chicago game, man. I wish I could take away a positive. We led with a positive last week about the loss.
Hey, there is one positive. PFF still has Matthew Stafford as their number 4 quarterback somehow.
Hey.
How about that? I haven't checked Football Outsiders. I don't know if they share that same view, to be honest, but I'm going to look it up right now.
Hey, that's fine. I mean,
and by the way, Matthew Stafford is very mad offline.
He is. Stafford has dropped number 17 in quarterbacks for in DVOA and DYAR for Football Outsiders.
And I would probably trust that more than PFF. So never mind about that positive thing.
I mean, it's still better than some of these quarterbacks on here. He's still above Alex Smith, Tyrod Taylor, Carson Palmer.
Oh, yeah. There's that Honolulu blue spin. There you go.
Lather said Andrew Luck is 22.
Lather that up in a nice base cone of that Honolulu blue shine, man. That sure does look good.
Look, man, I'm not a slappy. You know me. I'm not a slappy. But I do have problems with some fans out there. But I just this is a game that the Lions really shouldn't have lost. Like, any which way you pointed out, like, the Bears played very well, but you also lost to Brian Hoyer.
And made him look really good.
Incredibly good.
Like, the Lions made Brian Hoyer look so good that there's now a quarterback controversy in Chicago. That's how bad the Lions defense looked. Now people are like, well, what do we have going on here in Chicago with our quarterbacks? And John Fox is like, hey, you know, the players that play well, they're going to play above the players that are injured and coming back. Now everybody thinks Brian Hoyer is like this lock to throw for 300 yards every week. And I'm like, do we not remember what happened last year with Brian Hoyer?
No one learns their lesson with Brian Hoyer.
I was going to say, hold on. Does anybody remember what happened in that AFC playoff game with Kansas City and Houston? All of us as a collective said, no more games where Brian Hoyer starts. He's a guy you break the glass case of in case of emergency from now on.
There's a reason why they went through so many quarterbacks last year when he was deemed the starter.
Oh, man. Also, who had his career revitalized was Eddie Royal, who ran for like 100 yard, who like caught for 100 yards for the first time in what, 5 years? 3 years, 4 years, something like that.
I actually think Eddie Royal is a viable fantasy contributor.
Oh,
just because of this one game. He gets to play the Lions again. So, you know, start him that week.
Get ready. Yeah. I don't have a positive from this game. I really don't. Like, the defense, we knew the defense was awful, and it was awful. But I think I was just shocked with how bad the offense was, too. And it's not even, like, anything specific, because I'm sure we're going to get into the Stafford interceptions, the one with Golden Tate and the one near the end of the game. But at the same time, too, I'm just watching this team try to get down the field, and even when they are converting on first down, which they struggled to get those first downs, but when they were getting them, they weren't going up tempo. Like, we were sold on this idea of this defense, of this offense being up tempo, being able to score pretty quickly and put defenses on their back foot. And instead, when they're down two scores, they're just mucking around, and it's a 4 minute drive that ends with Stafford getting picked off. Like, I'm just confused.
I mean, they're definitely not the offense that we saw in week one. They're not the offense we saw in week two. I think that I don't know if it's because of the pace was dictated by Chicago playing so slow or the Lions just trying something different. I don't know why their offense would try something different when it has looked so good. I really don't understand it. There were a lot of just questions that came out of last week's game, and I was not expecting to get more questions from the offensive side of the ball. I was expecting the defense to struggle, and they did. Granted, they still only gave up, you know, what was it, 17 points?
Yeah, only 17 points, granted. Yeah, yeah.
And granted, it is the Bears offense. So, I mean, that's nothing, you know, to write home about. But the fact that this was, I think this was the seventh time in Matthew Stafford's history as a quarterback for the Detroit Lions that the Lions failed to score an offensive touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the only one coming from Andre Roberts, who finally got one of those punt returns to be able to return for a touchdown, which is great. It put him right back in the game, and it just didn't go anywhere from there. I'm not sure just what happened. And again, it's only one game, and I'm sure we might be talking about this team again in a couple weeks where they suddenly put up like 30 again. But right now, the trend is not looking good for high scoring offense. I told someone I thought this team's identity was going to be what we saw in the Colts game, where you just dump on points and then hold on for dear life. And that just hasn't happened.
Yeah, I mean, they ran the ball, what, like less than 20 times and threw the ball like almost 40 times. So I don't know. I mean, that you're not going to really win many games if you're not at least trying to run the ball. I mean, I know you only have Theo Riddick, and at that point they had like Zach Zenner for most of the game, but they were pretty one-dimensional, and that's just really not going to cut it.
And even still, like, this game was still a game where the Lions, like, they weren't completely out of it either. It's just, once again, situations where it's like just the small things that really nickel and dime you. You know, Stafford's pass getting picked off to Tate, getting picked off to end the first half. Could have been 3 or 7 points right there. Zach Zenner getting stuffed on the goal line. That play, by the way, that they complete, that was on the Bears. The Bears that I forget the defender, but he completely jumped that play. He knew exactly what was coming and he stuffed it.
Well, I mean, I think everybody did. Everybody knew that was coming. It was just pretty predictable. And I thought that was just bad play calling at the end there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't want to give a full segment to it because I'm sure we're going to have to reuse this content again at some point, but kind of brings us to the final point from last week. And we're not even going to bother to preview the Eagles this week. We've got a special segment coming to you next, but we need to talk a little bit about Caldwell. Do you want to say anything about Golden Tate? Either of you first before we talk about Caldwell?
I could chime in about Golden Tate. I think a lot of people have the right to be at least concerned. I find it problematic that Golden Tate has not really found a way to get involved in the offense in the way that he was, you know, he was able to in his first couple of years here. I think that there's a lot to be said of the change over from Lombardi's system to Jim Bob Cooter's. Jeremy Reisman did. He ran some numbers to see what kind of drop off or what kind of change in production Golden Tate underwent when the Lions switched offensive coordinators. And Golden Tate's numbers they've dropped a little in terms of targets per game and in terms of, receptions per game, in terms of yards, in terms of yards after catch. Touchdowns per game. It's all been down ever since Cooter has taken over, and I'm not sure what to make of it. I'm not sure because we all talked about this offensive system being one that's, you know, quick firing, get the ball out quick, and it seems that would play to maybe Golden Tate's strengths, but it's weird seeing Cooter try to use him for these gimmick plays. I'm not ready for people to start, you know, claiming that this might be a, you know, a Titus Young 2.0 situation because,
Look at the drops too.
Yeah. The drops are concerning too. Yeah.
Yeah. Like this is a guy that we signed because he was so sure handed and I think he might've dropped one or two passes the year before he got onto the team.
I think there's something there to what you're talking about, Ryan, about the idea of him being used on gimmick plays and more just kind of out there routes. Like maybe that's what's kind of throwing him off right now. But I've got no answers right now. The only thing I can say is, as I said in my column, just don't say that he just doesn't want to play football, because I'm sorry, I can't accept that as an answer. Like I think he's trying as hard as he can. No. He's an alpha competitor.
Right, because if you say that he's just not trying, then all of a sudden he is in the Titus Young box, and I'm not putting Golden Tate in the Titus Young box. He has not lost his mind.
Yeah, some people want to put him in the Titus Young, Roy Williams box. And I mean, there are instances where guys quit, like Odell Beckham seems to be a big head, but Odell Beckham's also a head case. I don't think Golden Tate's a head case.
It's ridiculous because we're four games into the year and I don't think a single person had anything bad to say about him last year. Not even one person had a bad thing to say about Golden Tate. And now we're already talking about fucking trading him. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, I just it's frustration. And like, what happens if he has like a 150-yard game in like game six or something? Like, where does that fit in the narrative then?
Well, it all goes away, and it really depends on the outcome of the game too, though, right? Golden Tate could have 180 yards receiving on 13 catches, two touchdowns, and the Lions lose by a field goal, and all of a sudden it's Jim Bob Cooter's fault that he's throwing the ball too much to Golden Tate.
Eric Ebron conundrum. The Eric Ebron conundrum, man. You know, Eric Ebron was good yesterday, and all people saw was the blown assignment.
That was pretty bad.
It was bad.
And I think this will segue nicely into way that, you know, we want to wrap up this, you know, this talk about the Bears game is the play in which Golden Tate clearly didn't get the right kill signal for a route. He ended up running the wrong route. He ended up running what looked like a go route instead of, a deep out route. And it led to the Stafford interception before the half. When Jim Caldwell, after the game, wants to say that, well, it was always part of the game plan to get Andre Roberts more involved.
Come on.
If anybody believes that, I have some oceanfront property I can sell you in Montana, because that is the biggest load of shit I've ever heard in my entire life. I'm sorry, but on no planet, including the planet Earth, Andre Roberts is taking snaps away from Golden Tate.
I agree with you. Like, you know me, I've been very hesitant to call for Caldwell's head or anything like that. And we're going to be talking about Caldwell quite a bit. But don't sell me like that, Jimmy. Don't sell me like that, Jimmy. Don't insult me like that. I know what's going on.
That's what it is, right? I mean, it's kind of insulting to my football intelligence. Granted, I don't have a ton of it, but I definitely know that, you know, Golden Tate snaps do not come at the expense of getting Andre Roberts out on the field more. Okay, this was a guy who was fighting to make the team. It's not the guy who came into training camp understood as maybe the wide receiver number one option, and now it's seeming like he's the wide receiver number two option in this Cooter offense. But
we need to get Andrew Cotto on this. Was there ever a point where Andre Roberts was on the field without Golden Tate before that? I doubt it.
I don't think so. We'll come back. Next segment, we're going to talk about Mythbusters. Y'all like Mythbusters. We're going to bust some Lions myths in lieu of talking about the Eagles, who I think the Eagles are going to stomp a mud hole in us and walk it dry. But who knows? Maybe we get revenge on the gym shorts. I don't know. All right, guys. So before we go to the next segment, I'm here to talk to you about the boatload of money you could be making this weekend betting at mybookie.ag. You know who's going to win the game, right? Well, it's time to put your money where your mouth is. You know the Lions probably aren't going to be winning, but, you know, hey, what about some other team out there? I don't know. Fade the Lions. I don't care. But get some money on the game and score a big win today. Join thousands of online players just like me and start betting at mybookie. Look, you do all the daily fantasy out there. Maybe you got a bookie somewhere. I'm urging you, you just got to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. You're wasting your time betting anywhere else. They have in-game live betting, so you can even place a bet after kickoff. I follow some professional gamblers on Twitter. They all bet in-game. It's very big. There are ways you can make some good money doing that. And unlike some other websites you might find, MyBookie offers fast, no-hassle payouts when you win. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit with a 100% bonus. Use promo code PRIDE to activate this offer. That's promo code PRIDE. Visit mybookie.ag today or call 844-900-BETS. 844-900-BETS. You play, you win, you get paid. Expert or rookie, you got to check out MyBookie. Sign up today. All right, we're busting myths. We're back here on the Pride of Detroit podcast. We're busting myths. We're myth busting. I'm sorry, I don't watch Mythbusters, so this is something I don't get. But I know it's been a tradition. I know a couple of our writers have done Mythbusters for writing, and we just figure that, you know, we should probably just bust some myths right now. Just get our heads right, bust some myths about your Detroit Lions. And because there's really not going to be much else to talk about until this homestand starts and we start learning more about this team. So, but there's a few narratives going around, and you know me, I hate narratives. Like they make me mad when people start talking about the intangibles and the heart and the grit, and they start acting like they're Hawk Carlson. You know, the will to win must be measured.
Ugh, but, it sounds disgusting. It sounds disgusting just hearing it.
So let's talk about three myths where we are going to bust this week. This isn't going to be an every week segment like Rage Corner or Wally's World, but we're going to have some fun with this. So first myth up on the board here, fire the coach now because it will reinvigorate the team. This myth has come about because people are looking for a reason to convince other fans that Caldwell should be fired right now. And that is that they believe that if you fire the coach now, you will light a fire under the players and you will motivate them to play harder or something, I guess.
Do we really think that? Do we really think that's going to happen? Do we really think that if Jim Caldwell gets fired, that all of a sudden some coach is going to come in and save the season? I mean,
to be honest,
correct me if. Go ahead, Chris.
I was just going to say, to be honest, I think it has the opposite. Just right off the bat, before you even think about more like, you know, examples and fleshing this out, I think it does completely the opposite. I think if I am a player who's like on the last year of a contract and I see the coach just getting brazenly fired by some craven move to placate fans, I'm getting my resume together. I'm calling my agent. I'm not sticking around. I'm getting out because this building is going down in flames.
No, you're 100% right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I can really argue against that. I think that when it Lions fans are in an interesting position, because it seems that when the ship starts going down, it's immediately time to start blaming the head coach. And part of me doesn't want to fault Lions fans because, yes, they've had an awful string of head coaches ever since, you know, the beginning of, I would say, the 2000s, ever since Bobby Ross got fired in 2000 and Gary Moeller took over.
Since the new century.
Yeah. So ever since, you know, the turn of the century, Lions coaches haven't fared too well. You know, we've had some success intermittently. There's been flashes, but there's never been anything that's been consistent. And I think it's entirely problematic still, though, to ignore all of these other situations you see happen around the NFL each and every year, to ignore the fact that when coaches do get fired midseason, things don't get turned around. You know, these coaches who come in midseason, these interim coaches, they come in and they're doing scab work. It's not anything. They're not trying to save the season. You know, if you want to argue anything, they're coming in there for damage control because things have just got so bad. There's no turning back. I think that it's never a GM's first or second or maybe even third choice to fire a head coach midseason, because that's a declaration of, and it's an interesting situation with Bob Quinn. I want to make that clear first, is that with him coming in and retaining Jim Caldwell, we can all agree. I'm going to open up this to, you know, you and to both you guys, Chris and Alex. When Quinn came in and retained Caldwell, do we think that was a smart move by Quinn?
I you know, at the time I defended it, but I don't know if it's a smart move. But I, you know, you bring up something about maybe this idea of it being a mistake, and just to use college as an example, and I keep going back to college, but I like talking about college a lot of the ways. A lot of people were saying on the Facebook Live, it's like, no, fire Caldwell now. Don't let him be able to win his job back, because that technically, according to some people, happened in college. Les Miles, LSU wanted to fire Les Miles last year. What happened was Les Miles, and this is more because LSU bungled it, but Les Miles ended up managing to save his job for that year, and then he gets fired like very early on this season. So their whole idea is like, no, don't let him get a chance to get back to a winning record or something. But if he gets back to a winning record, like I don't know if that's a bad thing, because you'll have a winning record.
Yeah, going back to Ryan's question about whether it was the right move or not to keep Jim Caldwell, I actually think it definitely was, because I mean, this team, it's very, very thin, and you don't want to. Well, first of all, like who are you going to hire? Like, there really didn't seem to be, very many good coaching candidates out there. Well,
just because you all say Matt Patricia or John Gruden doesn't mean those people are coming.
Right, and then second of all, if you did hire that guy, did you really want to bring them onto this team with how it is right now? And I don't really think he wanted to do that, because this team is not very deep at all. And if he was going to hire his guy right when he came in, it probably wouldn't have ended well. And then people are going to be like, same old Lions.
Fire this coach too.
I think waiting a year, waiting out Jim Caldwell, seeing what he's seeing right now, and I mean, he's probably going to fire him after this year, and that's probably the best move.
So I asked you that question because I think personally, as a first year GM, it makes sense, obviously, for Bob Quinn to keep Jim Caldwell around, because A, it buys him an extra year because he can sit back and take a hands off approach and say, well, this wasn't my guy. let me bring in my guy now, and that's going to buy him an extra year. So in your first year as your GM, you're still, you see this a lot with Bob Quinn. He's churning over the bottom of that roster. He's trying to find maybe some depth guys that he can find at the, you know, at the bottom of the barrel, these guys that he's taking chances on that had, you know, success at the collegiate level that maybe because of injuries or, you know, a couple of bad breaks in the pros so far, things haven't gone so well. And now he's trying to bring those guys in here. Granted, they're not getting a lot of playing time or they're on the practice squad or whatnot, but he's trying to turn this roster into his own, essentially, is what I'm trying to say. And he can buy himself an entire year by keeping Caldwell on board and then essentially saying, well, I kept Caldwell because either, you know, the forwards wanted it or Rod Wood wanted it, whatever the case may be. But now he can bring in his own guy next year if he chooses to do so. Now, Chris, you bring up the interesting point of, well, fire Caldwell now because we don't want him to have a chance to win his job back. I don't understand that at all. Like, I totally agree with your point that if Caldwell coaches this team back and if they end up going 9-7 and catching a wild card spot, what? What's wrong with that? What's wrong with that? I mean, that means that, you know, that means that the season was a success. If you make the playoffs and you are the Lions, it is a success. And that doesn't mean that he's necessarily going to keep his job, but you know, cause I trust that Quinn is going to make these decisions after the season and he's going to evaluate things. And if he thinks that, you know, these slow starts by Caldwell are not fortuitous and that he should go in a different direction, I think that he will absolutely, you know, pull the plug. But I just want to say a couple of quick stats. You know, I've been looking at, you know, ever since the year 2000, ever since the turn of the century, and I wanted to start there because of that was the year that Bobby Ross was fired after he started 5-4 and then Gary Moeller took over and went 4-3. Ever since that season in 2000, there have been 27 head coaches that have been fired midseason in the NFL up to last year. And out of those 27 coaches, only 8 of them went on to have winning records. And a couple of those coaches were, you know, Jim Tom Sula, who won one game, and, you know, you know, Pat Shurmur last year, who took over for Chip Kelly at the end of the year and won his.
Oh, who was the guy who took over for the Dolphins? Who was that guy, that tight ends coach?
Dan Campbell.
Just Dan Campbell, Mr. just all muscle, no brains.
Joe
himself.
Philbin started 1-3 and Dan Campbell ended up going 5-7 the rest of the year. And hey, just because he did better than Joe Philbin, it doesn't mean that he,
that's not a high bar.
Doesn't mean he kept his job. Okay. So
I think that's going back to our original idea of busting this myth though. Look at these records that Ryan's giving you here. They don't reinvigorate the team. The team is not, people have this idea of coaching as being the dictatorship, of being Vince Lombardi walking into the Green Bay Packers locker room and turning men into boys, or Nick Saban yelling at kids in Alabama and, you know, reinvigorating them after a loss. That's fine to work in the past or even at a collegiate or high school level. It doesn't happen in the pros. It doesn't work in the pros.
No, it doesn't work. And, you know, looking at some of these coaches that ended up, you know, taking interim jobs and then, you know, parlaying that into getting the job the following season, Dick LeBeau took over for the Bengals in 2001 and 2002. You know how well he did? He was out of there by the time it was 2003 and, you know, Marvin Lewis took over because he had a couple of 2-win seasons and, you know, a 4-win season. Mike Singletary took over on an interim basis and ended up being the head coach. Tom Cable took over the interim, you know, and was the coach the following year. Leslie Frazier. You know, the only guy that I see here that has been relatively successful is Jason Garrett, who took over for Wade Phillips. And, you know, how often do we hear Jason Garrett's name get thrown around about, you know, him being on the hot seat? None of these coaches work out. It's not. And the last thing I want to say is that I've given you the facts on the fact that if you fire Caldwell now and you bring on an interim, things aren't going to turn around this season. But in addition to that, if you do it now, it's not like you're going to get a further head start jump on finding a coach, because there's a certain protocol you have to follow as an NFL team for hiring a head coach. You can't interview anybody from a team until the season's over.
Real quick, firing the coach, not going to reinvigorate the team, because like it or not, despite being 1-3, these players still for some reason respect the hell out of Caldwell, and firing him now, like, you thought that they weren't trying.
Yeah, now they're really not going to try.
Not going to give a shit. Yeah, they're not going to give a shit.
Again, like I said before, they're going to be getting their resumes ready and everything. But, like, yeah, myth busted. And we should probably at some point later on talk about just why just constantly firing coaches. That's what bad teams do. Like, just whoever, I mean, I think Caldwell should be fired, is probably going to be fired, but whoever comes next, you got to give him more than a couple year, 3 years next, for whoever's next. You just have to, because the team, the ones who fire their coaches every 3 years are the Dolphins. The Dolphins are awful. So, next myth we have to bust, and we got to keep this one a little short because we went way long on that first one. The refs are out to get the Detroit Lions. You know, we've been making a lot of news lately about looking at things like holding calls and the 66-yard penalty that probably shouldn't have been. And even Sunday against the Bears, Tahir Whitehead doesn't even touch that guy and he gets a pass interference. And, you know, this goes back on a deeper thing, and it's rooted a little bit in the Cowboys lost in the playoffs. But even going back further than that, even going back probably even further before the Calvin Johnson catch, that wasn't a catch or whatever, the Calvin Johnson rule, like, there's this idea that the refs are out to get the Lions. This is a fairly common myth. It's common with nearly every team. But it's really hard, especially when you look at how many bad calls Lions have had. How do you even address the myth?
It's kind of difficult to address. I mean, yes, if you want to look at it face value, the Lions are averaging quite a few penalties per game. Through 4 weeks now, they're averaging 9.8 penalties per game. That's 30th in the NFL. So 30th in the NFL, meaning, you know, They've had the third most penalties called against them in the NFL per game. The only two teams that outrank them are Jacksonville and Oakland. So technically, by definition, if you want to say that the refs are out to get the Lions more so than any other team, well, look at Jacksonville and look at Oakland. But we've gone back, even in the Titans game this year, when it was just flag city and flags were getting thrown all over the field on nearly every play. For all the penalties that the Lions got that game, and I think, what was it? It ended up being something like 16 or 17 penalties. Yeah, it was something like egregious. That, yeah. But the egregiousness kind of stopped when we all went back and looked on film and said, well, probably 14 or 15 of those penalties were legit penalties. They were holding penalties.
Yeah, the only one we quibbled with was the Eric Ebron pass interference one.
I mean, that's a legitimate gripe. I totally get that. And that took points off the board. But, you know, what that helps fuel the myth, though, right, Chris? Right, Alex? I mean,
yeah, but I think there's a little bit of myopia going on here, because, again, this happens with every team. And, you know, the Lions haven't gotten, I will even say, too, the Lions haven't even gotten one of these awful, like, unsportsmanlike conduct calls that have just been, like, wiping out games because, you know, these refs are calling these things on very minute things. But I think, you know, every team gets bad calls. I'm sorry, I have no data to back it up like you do, Ryan, but every team gets bad calls. It happens, and I understand it sucks. And when it's your team, you look at those things more than anything. But it's a recency bias. I don't remember the right term in my mind, but it is absolutely a bias that you have where you're only watching your team, and thus every call you see is more important than, say, another team.
Well, it's almost kind of like a limited sample size, right? Because you're only watching Lions football games. I just pulled the numbers on 2015. The Lions were 14th in the league in most penalties. They only averaged 6.5 penalties a game. Buffalo averaged 8.9. I mean, the numbers are significantly different. So I agree with the myopia thing. I just think it's silly to think that the refs are out to get the Lions, because that's some real tinfoil stuff. I don't know. What do you think, Alex?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty weak excuse. And that was a pretty good point that you brought up. Like, how many games are these people watching a week other than the Lions? Probably one, maybe Monday Night Football or something.
One or two, maybe the afternoon game. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's such a weak excuse. And maybe there are a couple of bad ones, like we said, the Ebron one, maybe the pass interference one. But pretty much, like, it just seems like 99% of them, we completely deserve it. And it's just, it just comes down to coaching. It's, I don't think they're out to get us at all. It's,
all right. I don't know if we can say that myth is busted, but I think we handled that pretty well. But let's get on to the last myth we have, because this is going really long.
This one should be short, though, if you ask me.
Well, we just need to say no to this one across the board. The Fords must sell this team to a winner. The myth goes that the Fords have been a losing family ever since William Clay Ford, God rest his soul, got this team. He has just been he was unable to manage an organization. He prided friendship over winning. And it hasn't, even though he is 6 feet under, nothing has changed. It's like a ghost or a stink hanging over the Ford family. And it's because deep in their blood, they don't know how to win. They're not, say, for instance, the Rooneys, who are winners because the Steelers just win. So they need to sell the team, which I mean... Okay, I've got to walk that back, because I was going to say I couldn't remember the last time a team was sold, but I just remember Terrence Pegula bought the Bills not long ago. But either way, they need to find someone like the Ilitch family or someone else, or Dan Gilbert, someone who wants to win. And until they do, their lack of desire to win will somehow seep down the ranks of this organization and infect everyone.
I just find it so silly to think that Any kind of business model would say it's more profitable for your team to win games, because you get more exposure, you get more nationally televised games, more teams get interested in you. Don't tell me that Jerry Jones didn't benefit from having the Cowboys be the most prolific team of the 90s and turn into, you know, America's darling and become the hotbed for, you know, all of football nation, you know, the most popular team in all of football. It just befuddles me. Like every owner wants their team to do well because that results in more money.
I guess my thing is this. I just don't understand why the obsession with owners. I think what it comes from is, like, you fired so many general managers and coaches and gone through so many quarterbacks and players that all you have left to try to do is try to change the ownership. That's like it's like some weird kind of like last elimination, that it's like, okay, the only thing that hasn't changed is ownership. But that doesn't make sense, because, like, for one, I don't even agree on the idea, this myth that the Rooneys are a winning family. Like, they have the Steelers, and, like, yeah, they made a couple of good hires. But if they didn't make those good hires and the Steelers instead, like, cratered, if the Steelers didn't get their general manager, whoever he is, and they didn't get Mike Tomlin, and instead they, like, you know, went through a doldrum like, say, the Lions, like, are the Rooneys suddenly not a winning family? Because they're not winning. So what? Have they suddenly lost their will to win? Like, it's a very tortured logic, because it's very like, okay, they're a winning family. Why are they a winning family? Well, it's their teams win. They know how to win. Okay, but how do they know how to win? Their teams just win. Like, that just seems bogus to me. Like, as you say, the ownership, unless you are a crazy man like Jerry Jones, the owner is not, or Jim Irsay, the owner is not taking a deep interest in the team itself. They shouldn't be, because that's interfering with the work of the front office and the coaching staff.
Alex, you got anything to say about the owners?
I think Chris pretty much just covered it all there.
I'm sorry.
No, I tried. No, you nailed it, man.
I mean, look, I understand, like, it's not an inspiring family. And I don't know, like, the idea of Mike Ilitch, the Ilitches being a winning family. I mean, they haven't won a World Series with the Tigers. That's just sitting right there. Sitting right there in your whole "they're a winning family" narrative.
What are
you doing about that?
Owners do silly things, too. Look at Art Modell. He fired Bill Belichick when he was in Cleveland and then moved the team to Baltimore.
And my favorite, again, the Ursays, Bob Ursay, drunk as hell all the time, moving the Colts out of Baltimore in the middle of the night, lying about taking helicopter trips to Phoenix. Just a complete bungling idiot. And his son isn't much better. Like, these, there are bad owners in this league. I don't know if the Fords rank among them. I just don't. I'm sorry. I know the team's snake-bitten, but I just don't think that's because of the Fords. All right. Myth busted. We need to move on. We had fun with that, though. Did you guys have fun with that?
I enjoyed it.
I liked it.
I feel like we bled over a little bit from Rage Corner, from, like, what should have been Rages. But we're going to do Rage Corner next. It's going to be a shorter one, and we also have a Wally's World. This is going to be
your third rage of the night already.
Yeah, geez. I'm full of vim and vigor and vinegar and whatever else. A lot in Mythbusters, which kind of turned into a little bit of Rage Corner here, but this is where we get our rants out for the week. It's where we yell at people, usually just either the team or fans or something else. Just happens here. It's the id unleashed. And I think it's just me tonight. And I just want to talk to you directly, kind of like Bob Costas having that fireside chat on Sunday Night Football, except instead of Bob Costas being very calm and rational, I'm just going to be angry here. Because I'm Lions fans, I'm kind of mad at you. Not all of you. Some of you are all right. A lot of you are all right. I love this team, and I love a lot of the fans I meet with this team. I enjoy being a Lions fan. The joke around here is that I'm not a Lions fan. And you know what? That's kind of true. Probably in an alternate universe, I would probably end up like my cousins. I would be a Steelers fan. Probably in an alternate universe, I might have just decided to give in to my impulses as a dorky teenager and become a Raiders fan or something. But I picked Detroit. I picked Detroit. It's my team. It's not because I was beholden to it. I didn't come into this because my family was a Lions family or whatever. I didn't come into it because I lived in Detroit. I didn't live in Detroit. I lived in Toledo. But, you know, I was a Pistons fan. I picked up the Lions because they were in the vicinity. And, like, look, this team's been bad. This team's been good. But it's, you know, I've made a lot of friends doing this stuff. Ryan, Alex, you're my friends, right? Maybe?
I'm letting you rage.
But, I was about to do the turn. But.
However. Stephen A. Smith.
That is still my favorite tweet of all time. That Hegel tweet. Yes.
Oh, God.
But there is a contingent of this fan base that I don't understand you. You are as alien as the stars to me. And I don't understand why you do the things you do. And every year it feels like I try to ignore this contingent of the fan base, but it just gets louder and louder. And I finally have had it. Like, it's four games in and they're already out. You know who they are. They have three letters. Same old Lions. And then there's this term that I just realized is out there called lionized, which I guess is the process of becoming a sad sack fan or something, or accepting failure or something, or some dumb shit like that, that just, you know, just wanting to slap people for wanting to enjoy a sport. I don't understand you people. I don't. Because while on one hand, there are plenty of fans out there who are just mad at the team, and that's completely acceptable. And there are some fans out there who are just exhausted of watching this team lose, and that's completely acceptable. But what's not acceptable, but like those fans still come from a position where they still, at a base level, the reason why they're feeling this grief in them is because they love the team. They are still fans of the team. Most of y'all who are called, who are the SOL people, I'm sorry, you're not fans of the team, because there is nothing in you that I see that says that at any point in your life that you like this team. Or like maybe once upon a time you did, and you just got so cynical that you just excised it all out of you, because your concerns about talking about how this team sucks or how this team will never win, it's not coming from a place of grief that is born originally of being excited for Lions football. You're just coming from a very cynical point. You're just coming from a point where you want to tell people that this team will suck. And you want not for this team to defy you and be good. You want to be vindicated as being right. You're not coming from any point of joy in sport. You're coming from a very negative place. You are basically enraged at the idea of people enjoying a team, even though it's not shown like any will to do it. This is insane. This is insane. It's nowhere else in sports like this. I don't think this exists with any other NFL fan base out there. Such a sullen group as that. Like, not even the Bills or Browns have you in it. Not even the Bills or Browns. Not even the Cubs. You want to talk about how long the Lions have gone without winning? Let's talk about the Cubs. The Cubs don't have you in it. There are not these people in those towns telling people that you shouldn't even bother being a fan of this team because they will just let you down, and saying that, oh, you'll be checked out by week four. You'll be ready to go to the Red Wings. Like, what's the matter with you? Why do you keep coming?
Lions aren't the only team to, you know, never make a Super Bowl appearance. Preach.
Like, I don't understand you people, though. I really don't. And I don't want an explanation, because it's just going to be cloying and full of yourself and cynical. So goddamn cynical. It just won't make sense. And I just won't have it. And it's not because I'm a slappy. I'm not a slappy. I refuse to be a slappy. I'm not one sitting out here drinking the Kool-Aid other than my own Kool-Aid recipe. But I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid and saying Super Bowl. I predicted this team to go 6-10, but I stick around with this team. But holy shit, man, like, what made you so cynical and so just angry at the idea of anyone having any fun with this football team? Your goal isn't to really have fun with sports or with the Lions. Your goal is to make everyone as angry and cynical as you. And that's really fucked up. That really is. Sort your life out. Use that energy to do something productive for our society. Like, what the hell is wrong with you? What the fuck is wrong with you? How'd you get this way? That's all I've got. Same old Lions people. I'm sorry. And I don't like policing fans. I don't like the idea of, if like a fan boos, like that's their right to boo at a game. If a fan decides to like flip off an opposing player, like say that crazy woman in Miami, that's her right. She paid her ticket. She's allowed to be a fan. I think, you know, you're kind of embarrassing yourself doing a lot of that stuff, but on a basic level, I don't care. But same old Lions guys, because there's just no evidence that you are right now a fan. And don't tell me that this is because you've been a fan for, you know, 10 years, 20 years, however long. You were a fan back then, maybe, but you're not a fan now. And that's what matters. You can stop being a fan. You don't need to pick another team to stop being a fan. Like, I don't get you. Just do something more productive. Try to cure cancer or something. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, you're my friend, Chris.
What?
I said, yeah, you're my friend.
Thank you, Alex.
Yeah, you're my friend too, Chris. Especially after doing that for everybody. I just want to add a quick thing to that. I totally agree. I can't understand how people get so jaded, so cynical, as you said, so just bent out of shape about something that they're supposed to watch out of fun and entertainment. And I get it. I understand. Losing is not fun. I'm a Spartans fan. I I tough would one, have rather took a swift week. A swift yeah I would have rather taken a swift kick to the nuts rather than having to watch that game all the way through to the end. But at the end of the day, I could laugh it off and say, this team just isn't going to be for me this year. I'm still going to tune in and watch the games, but I maybe won't follow them as intently, and I maybe won't, you know, feel the same kind of fervor and passion that I would normally have. But that doesn't make me say, well, you know, same old Spartans back to being little bro or something like that. Sports is so fluid, and I think some people just can't learn to ride the wave. I think that's all I can really say about that. And the same old Lions people, they just can't ride the wave of sports. And
it's just not worth getting that mad. It's not worth getting that mad over it and then going on Twitter and doing something like adding.
Well, it's not even a matter of getting mad. It's just they insist on telling everyone else about how much this team sucks, and they should. It's not even that they're mad. It's just they're telling other people they shouldn't bother to.
Well, they're doing that because they're mad. But
I guess.
But I don't know. You're right, though. Let's move on.
Wally's World.
Where's Wally? Where's Wally? Did you say him? Where's Wally?
Where's Wally? Where's Wally?
Are we got a Wally's World this week, Ryan?
Oh yeah, we have a short Wally's World, and it has to do with the Lions game last week against the Chicago Bears.
I'm disappointed we have not gotten a lot of hot takes from your dad yet.
Well, are you ready?
Okay, here we go.
All right, so I was quite under the weather Sunday. It probably had something to do with not only the fact that I'm doing an awful lot of work right now. I'm working like these 12-hour days, but on top of that, on Saturday, the Spartans did lose, and I overserved myself at a local establishment and did not feel well the following morning. But with that being said, I didn't do a whole lot of watching of the Lions game this week. I watched it after the fact, and it was much easier to digest in 40 minutes, a condensed version on Game Pass, than I'm assuming it was over 3 hours on Sunday. But I woke up from a nap on Sunday, and I went to go talk to my father, Wally, who this segment is so graciously named after, and the hot takes were a hot. They were a blazing. They were a piping, steaming. Wally says that Jim Bob Cooter cannot call a football game to save his life. He says that Jim Bob Cooter is the reason that this team is not winning football games, and that he can't believe how bad the offense is.
Okay.
Well, I understand that from watching that Bears game so intently. Yeah, you'd probably ascertain the Lions couldn't move the football all that well. When they did move the football and got it into the goal line, they made some questionable decisions and with play calling. But from this one game, my dad has ascertained that Jim Bob Cooter can't call a game to save his life, and I think he's ready for the Lions to move in another direction.
So you're saying that he's not going to be voting for Jim Bob Cooter for president then?
I don't think he would vote for Jim Bob Cooter for president.
Nope. Doesn't sound it. I can't wait for basketball season to start, and he's watching the Undisputed now, right?
He is watching the Undisputed. He enjoys the Undisputed. He likes Shannon Sharp. I think I mentioned that on last week's show.
Apparently it's doing well. Like it's getting up there. It's starting.
Is anybody
to challenge.
Surprised by that though? It's Skip Bayless.
Yeah, Skip Bayless, I always thought was kind of like Stephen A. Smith. We make the jokes about him all the time, but I think Skip Bayless kind of understood what it took to get that attention for a hot take more than Stephen A.
Is it on Fox Sports 1?
Yes.
Then I'm pretty surprised, because who the fuck watches Fox Sports 1?
Well, this is finally it. This is finally the one show that's doing all right for them, I guess.
Oh.
Well,
Cyberhuman ranting Jason Whitlock couldn't save him.
If you want a sidebar Wally's World topic, you bringing up the Undisputed kind of sparked my memory. My dad thinks that First Take is a hot steaming pile of dog shit.
He's jumped the boat.
He has totally jumped the boat, which makes me think that he is a Skip Bayless subscriber.
Who's even on First Take anymore?
Max Kellerman, and my dad is not a fan.
I don't even know who that is. Max, so.
Max is a fine guy. He's a fine guy. He did sports. He does like ESPN Sports Nation. He does like HBO boxing. He's the ringside interview guy who always has to put up with some boxer's shit. Like he's a cool guy. I just don't know if he's like he's hot takey enough to be there.
He's not wired like that. No, he's not wired for the hot takes on television like Skip Bayless is. And, he was the host of Around the Horn during its inception before Tony Reale took over, too. So, yeah,
no, he's a swell guy. I just don't think he's a Skip Bayless.
Yeah,
it's hard to be a Skip Bayless.
There's only one Skip Bayless.
There really is.
And my dad loves him.
When he retires or when like he leaves like sports television, he will be one of the more transformative figures. Probably not for the better, but he will be transformative.
Let's get into some reader questions, guys.
Let's do it. Let's do mailbag. Here in the mailbag now, all your questions at Ask POD. We have that post up for you every week on Monday. And when we ask for them on Twitter at Pride to Detroit, we're going to lead the mailbag actually with a story, not a question, a story that reader Billy Sims made me do. Maybe do it. I think it's
maybe
not
do.
In his name. Made me do. Yeah. Sends us about Steve Young. This story's kind of blown up a little bit, but I feel like we should probably read this story on air because it is magical. All right, so this comes from a excerpt of Steve Young's new book that he was talking to Peter King from Monday Morning Quarterback about, and it's about kind of I'm trying to look this up right now when it comes to so Steve Young is talking about kind of the attention he gets, I guess, because he came into the league after the USFL. He was a superstar in the USFL and out of college, and he went to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers once the USFL folded. And he was saying, quote, "Even on the field, I can't escape the craziness. We play the Colts at home. Partway through the second quarter, I'm in the huddle when the head referee taps me on the shoulder. 'Can I talk to you for a second?' he says. I step away from the huddle. 'Hey, listen, my daughter's going to BYU,' he whispers. Next thing I know, he's trying to convince me that I should meet his daughter. 'I'd like you to take her out,' he says. I can't believe this. We're in the middle of a game. 'Oh, okay,' I said. 'What's your name?' He tells me, and I return to the huddle. Late in the game, we're down 31-23, and I'm trying to mount a comeback. I scramble out of the pocket and take a brutal hit. It causes me to fumble just before the whistle blows to stop the play. I'm lying on the ground when the defense recovers a loose ball, all but sealing our defeat. Suddenly, out of nowhere, a yellow flag lands next to me. The referee, whose daughter is headed to BYU, calls a personal foul on the defense. First down, Tampa Bay. I get up and brush myself off. Then the ref walks past me whispers that she likes Italian food."
Wow, this is the first time hearing about that. That's crazy.
This is a magical story. Now there's more to this too. So Steve Young actually also, so the ref's daughter is going to BYU. Steve Young was the quarterback. He came out of BYU. He was like one of the best players to come out of BYU. But not only that, I looked it up. Steve Young is actually a descendant of Brigham Young himself. Of Brigham Young, the namesake of BYU, and also like the successor to Joseph Smith, the founder of Mormonism.
So is Steve Young married to that referee's daughter right now?
I wonder. I really do wonder. I don't think so.
Even better story.
But I think, you know, I'm taking from this, like, we joke a lot about, like, Notre Dame being the team of Catholics or whatever, but BYU literally is, like, that's the team for Mormons in America. And, like, I'm wondering, so, like, he's sending his daughter to BYU, so he's probably Mormon himself. So I'm wondering if this is, like, him trying to get into the bloodline of, like, the prophets.
Or get into the good graces of an NFL quarterback who's a superstar.
Why not both?
I mean, yeah. Two birds with one stone.
Yeah, really. This is Tampa, too. It's not like he's a superstar just yet.
I was going to say, but Tampa Bay in those days they were a dumpster fire.
Awful.
Booyah.
Didn't they go on? They went winless one year, I think.
I want to say they came close.
They went winless, but the Lions still hold the record because it wasn't a 16-game season at that point.
I can neither confirm nor deny because of my football intelligence. I think you're right, though. You're my friend, so I'll trust you, Chris.
Okay. Thank you. You're my friend, too, Ryan. Okay, Critical Perspective wants to ask, and we've got some Lions questions, but we need to lead off a little lighthearted. The Queen. How many people on Earth currently call the Queen by her first name regularly to her face? I think he's talking about the Queen of England.
Okay.
So who all calls the Queen by her actual name and not her title?
I don't reference the Queen at all.
I'm trying to think, like, who in, like, her nuclear family would call her by her name instead of the Queen?
Maybe her son, I think. Prince What's-His-Face. William? I'm sorry, I don't. Yeah, I'm sorry, William? I just don't know. I don't keep up with British royalty. I know there's a lot of Americans who, like, really love the stories of British royalty. I don't get that.
The only royalty that I acknowledge are the West family. Kanye and Kim.
Get better, Kim. God, what an awful episode.
That's got to be traumatic. I feel bad for it Kim. Is.
Very, very traumatic. And
I'm not being sarcastic at all.
No, absolutely not. I know how much you like.
Well, are you talking about the gunpoint thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, in Paris.
She was robbed. No,
that's pretty damn serious.
Tied up and robbed. Yeah.
I thought that she even talked about, I saw a headline that said that she was like, feared that she was going to be raped. I mean, that's legitimate. That's terrifying. I can only imagine how terrifying that would be. We should ask Ryan Lochte.
You son of a bitch. You son of a... Okay. Okay, we're going to do some Lions questions now.
How was that lighthearted, by the way?
it took a dark turn.
Yeah, that took a dark turn. I'm sorry. That took a really dark turn.
The only royal family I could think were the Wests and probably, you know, Sean Carter and Beyonce Knowles.
Next question.
Okay. Let's get this one from Lethal Sacks on Twitter. Who do you got in an NFC North winner take all battle royal of mascots? Ryan, I'm pretty sure we answered this question on a football fight, didn't we?
I think we did. What is it for the NFC North division?
Yes. We did because we had this like row about union workers for the Packers, whether they're tough or not.
Well, the Packers are coming in last.
Well, because naturally they usually come in first and everything else, so we have to put them in last in this fictional battle.
Well, because their mascot sucks.
We argued in favor of them is that they would work together because they're good, tough union men.
Right, yeah.
No.
And I think, like, wasn't Arif Hassan, like, arguing that most Vikings were actually vegetarians or something?
There is something, and I think somebody tried to claim that if the battle was on land that they wouldn't be as effective, and Arif was able to defuse that too.
They fight pretty well on land. I don't know.
They do. I mean, I feel like the Lions would definitely beat bears in a fight. I think we can agree on that just because.
Well, I think it depends on what kind of bear. Definitely not a polar bear, but grizzly bear, maybe.
I feel like lions are just too fast. Plus, they travel in prides.
Yeah, they're pack hunters.
Yeah.
But we're doing one-on-one here. We're doing a one-on-one.
That's true.
Here.
That's true.
Oh, okay. Well.
Well, you know what? Go listen to football fights.
Yeah. It's a terrible answer.
I like this question. Let's try to get a real answer then. Fine. What do you have?
Oh, Lions. Sparty. For sure.
Sparty. Sparty. I don't know. I think vegetarianism aside, I'm going to go with the Vikings.
Yeah, it's probably a good answer. They're good at everything else this year, so why not give them this too?
16-0. Yeah, sure.
Jeez.
Sam Bradford trade looking real good right about now.
Oh, my God.
It's looking good for both sides.
I want to die.
Okay, Joseph R. Sweeney 5 asks, do you believe in cross sports jinxes / good luck? It seems to me that when Sparty has a good Saturday, Detroit has a good Sunday. Same with the Tigers. I don't think any of that worked this weekend.
That like, did not work was awful. At all this week. Hold on. Well, wait, if Sparty has a good weekend, or wait.
Well, because Sparty had a bad weekend. That's what so I mean. No. Then the Lions.
Was his observation that if Sparty has a bad weekend?
No, it was that if Sparty has a good weekend, so then the Lions do good.
It's a sign of good luck. It's a sign of good luck. If Sparty does well, the rest of Detroit sports do well.
So in that case, I guess he's right.
I guess. I mean, the past two weeks, I mean, last Sunday, not this past Sunday, but the Sunday before that, that was when the Tigers got blown out by the Royals. So I don't know. Sure.
I do tend to notice like when the Wings and Pistons are playing on the same night, if one of them wins first, I can usually expect the other one to win. But this is all like, I don't have a good amount of data to back this up. So
I don't think anybody does. I feel like this is just an observation he made in the past 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. As we like to say on the show, small sample size.
Spartans played pretty well last year, if I can recall. And I can't remember the Tigers playing too well or the Lions playing too well on Sundays. So,
okay. Draft question. We finally got Alex here. Eric Allen asks, would Peppers be a realistic option / need in the draft? He's talking about Jabril Peppers.
Jabril Peppers. How about we just draft Lamar Jackson?
Can we do that?
He's only 19. He's not eligible.
Can we draft his rights to be able to draft him next year?
We should be able to. Why not?
We should be able to. Like the NHL, you draft rights to players.
Do you remember back in the day when in the NBA you could draft the rights to players who like weren't eligible to come out yet? I mean, God.
Can't you like still do that in the MLB or something?
Incredible. I'm pretty sure the Celtics drafted Larry Bird. And he went back to school for another year, and then eventually he just ended up on their team. Like, why can't we do that with Lamar Jackson? I want Lamar Jackson.
Well, I do, too.
Let Matt Stafford go from Lamar Jackson. Yes.
Back to the original question about Peppers. I don't think Pepper... I think we're going to be picking, like, top five. Is that crazy to say?
I would say top 10. I wouldn't say top 5.
I know that Jabril Peppers is going in the top 10 in mock drafts right now, but he is the type of player that is going to fall and probably be picked in the late first round. That's just seems to be what happens with these like smaller secondary guys that are just playmakers, hybrid guys. So I don't think he's going to be in our range, but if he is, I, as a Michigan State fan, why not pick him? We need a playmaker. We need somebody that can gamble and make those huge plays. So
if Myles Garrett's available, would you take Myles Garrett over Peppers?
Oh yeah, D line all day.
Myles Garrett's so good. I know not a lot of Detroit fans probably aren't watching.
We need to pressure the quarterback, man. We need to pressure the quarterback.
He'd be fantastic.
I have one quick question, just because I've seen I've seen that Sua Cravens has had a pretty good couple of weeks in Washington, and I liked
him last draft. I really liked him.
I don't know how comparable he is to a player like Peppers, but I know he was a safety in college, he was a safety in college, and now he's playing like linebacker, but he's kind of like that hybrid kind of guy.
He was, and he was a safety outside linebacker hybrid at USC as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they're a little different because Peppers... I think Peppers is smaller. Am I right?
I'm assuming so. I think so.
Yeah, he's got to be like small. Yeah. So Peppers is smaller. He's very fast. I think they're a different player, but they play similar, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I was just wondering, because Sua Cravens was that kind of guy who like slipped in the draft just because it didn't seem like he had like a real position, and he's more of a hybrid kind of guy, just like a playmaker.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, like I'm sure he did not fit in certain teams' schemes.
Yeah,
and that's probably why he fell.
Both Cravens and Peppers are listed at 6'1", but we all know football heights can be very
weight.
216 for Sua Cravens. No listed weight for Jabril. I don't think 205 according to Wikipedia, but I
and
don't
there's
know
no way he's 6'1", so yeah
again, that's football, that's wink wink football height. We'll see what height they get him at the combine. I think that's probably the best place to look for that. All right, next question we got. We got a lot of questions about just, again, coaching. And I'm sorry, I don't think we're ready to talk about coaching and coaching options.
We already did.
Well, like, some people want to know, like, Josh McDaniels or who the top coaching options are. Like, can someone explain to me the obsession with Josh McDaniels? Because I just never thought he was a good coach.
Didn't he already get his turn? Like,
yeah, like,
you just kind of got to let sleeping dogs
didn't
lie.
Didn't he draft Tim Tebow? Didn't he want Tim Tebow? He kind of made that happen. And I'll give him the benefit of the doubt because, I don't know. No, I won't. Never mind. But
he got run out after two years in Denver.
Matt Patricia is another guy that everybody's talking about. And isn't he, like, kind of known to be an alcoholic and to be even more, like, calm and collected? Like, he makes Jim Caldwell look like a fucking madman out there.
If he's an alcoholic, he'll fit in with Jim Bob Cooter, I'm sure. But no, like, I mean, we're getting into the problem. It's like, I don't like these Patriots surrogates that everyone seems to pick up and they end up being awful. And more to the point, like, I don't know, like, it just seems like we're constantly going after, like, like a lot of these candidates are unproven coordinators. And again, Josh McDaniels is an exception because he got 2 years head coaching, but those 2 years were just, I mean, I don't know what to make of what happened with him in Denver. I really don't. Like, that godforsaken year with I don't know, man. I don't. Yeah.
He was a guy who was fired midseason in 2010, and Studsville took over and went 1-3.
Wasn't he was mostly fired though because of a videotaping scandal though.
And because he was 3-9.
Yeah. The Patriot way, man. Patriot way. All right. Let's see here. Bill Gershman wants to ask, how soon is too soon to start wearing my Charlie Batch sleeveless jersey?
Not soon enough. Wear it ASAP. I saw somebody wearing ASAP a Charlie Batch jersey at training camp, and I think it's great. Embrace it. Have fun. This all comes back to, we watch sports to be entertained and have
fun. Sports are fun. Sports are supposed to be fun. Absolutely. And, like, the NFL becomes too much of a cathedral. I think if nothing else, like, when your sport, when the culture around your sport stops being fun, like it was with baseball, people just don't want to watch your sport. Like, if you're taking your sport way too seriously, like, look at what the big sports are right now. It's college football and it's the NBA. And what do people have watching either those two sports? They have fun. Go to any number of SB Nation's college blogs. Go to Wide Right, Natty Light. Go to Every Day Should Be Saturday. Those guys are cracking jokes. They're writing ironic shit posts. They're doing weird things. I love them. Wish Pride of Detroit could be more like them. Okay, get a couple more in here. Underdog wrote some long stuff, but he wants to get in here. This kind of goes back to the same old Lions thing. He wants to ask, how much do you feel having a fan base full of loser mentalities affects the actual play of the team? It seems when fans speak of the losing culture for some reason, they do not seem to include themselves in that losing culture. Is that fair? You want me to crack it?
Go ahead.
I actually don't think that's fair. Actually, I don't know how I think in general, we as fans completely overestimate how much influence we have on these players. The only time you really have influence is if you're like just mercilessly booing someone, which, I mean, you're just a jackass at that point. But I mean, like, that's the only point where you have that power. Like, or if you're like one of like a million people who finds these guys out in the wild and just berates them or something, then yeah, like, yeah, absolutely. The negativity impacts the team. But other than that, like, most of the times the fans, like, you're not really like, I will guarantee you that not many people read their social media. And if they do, they're kind of a nerd to it by they're kind of just used to it by now. And other than that, like, I can guarantee you Eric Ebron and Golden Tate and Jim Bob Cooter, they're not reading your comments on Pride of Detroit.
Well, either that or they insulate themselves. I mean, you see, like,
they find ways to lock down. Yeah.
Yeah. Theo Riddick just blocks people. He doesn't care. I mean, and that's totally their right. And they should do that. And everybody handles criticism in different ways. I think it's hard to say that, you know, these 53 guys on this roster are all going to handle criticism the same way. I mean, that comes down to a certain amount of, you know, that boils down to how the coaching staff can kind of handle it, or, you know, redirect people's attention and everything, you know, try to, you know, build a positive outlook. But at the end of the day, I mean, all 53 of those guys are going to take criticism in different ways. And when they get booed, I mean, sure, it can be hard on them, but I think that they've been playing sports long enough that
you got to have to learn it.
I think for the most part, they have pretty thick skin, unless your name is Odell Beckham Jr.
Oh, geez. Yeah. Like, I think they're used to it. Like, I don't think fans have that kind of power. Like,
they think they do, though, right? Fans love to think that they have that power.
Well, they like to, especially when they write threatening open letters about how they're going to cancel their season tickets, not realizing there's thousands of people in wait for those season tickets. Yeah. Like, that kind of fan control that happens mostly in like Europe for some soccer clubs. Probably not for the largest one out there, probably not for Man U, but for some soccer clubs out there, yeah, if all your fans turn against you, absolutely, because they're able to consciously, collectively organize as a fan group there. I don't think the Lions fans are capable of like collectively making some statement, because it's just it's too big. It's too much.
They've tried paper bags. Tried.
Yeah, but it always comes down to just isolated incidents. It's just very hard to create a unified fan movement in that regard. And I don't even know what that would do. Like, these teams make so much damn money. Like, I don't know what you would do otherwise. Yeah. So
I wanted to say, like, sometime during the Rod Marinelli era, they tried to stage some kind of protest during the game, like a walkout or something. And what happened? The Ford's still on the team.
How many of those guys actually walked out too? Is like a couple hundred people among, like, you know, 65,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You just can't do it. All right. GV42 is delirious. He doesn't have a question. He just says, we aren't 6-0 anymore, but damn it. That just means we're 6-1. We own the Bears.
We still own the Bears.
I'm still going with we own the Bears. I think that'll piss him off too. Like, I saw Windy City Gridiron was like, we must reassert our dominance over this rivalry. You know what? You're still 1-6.
We own the Bears. In the past 7 games, yeah.
In the past 7 games.
Yeah, they'll point to the overall record, but no, those actually, are just arbitrary numbers.
I think in like, we'll have to look at like the whole 2000s, but I think the Lions still have a winning record there, but
I don't think so, but we'll say that we do.
Let's just say we do anyway. You know what we should also say? John Cena! Somebody once told me the world was gonna roll me. I ain't the sharpest tool in the shed. She was looking kind of dumb with the finger
and her thumb in the shape,
with my finger in her forehead.
Well,
I don't. Yeah, well.